A survey for UW System students about issues of freedom of speech and expression has been postponed by the organizers. That survey also led in part to the resignation of UW-Whitewater's interim chancellor, we learned this week. WPR higher education reporter Rich Kramer has been following this story. Rich, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for being here, or thanks for having me.
I'm glad to be here, too. That's okay. Who's behind this survey, Rich? Where is this thing coming from?
This is a partnership. It's coming from the Menard Center for Institutional and Policy Research at UW Stout in Menominee, and it's also in collaboration with an organization called WIPS, which is based in Wausau, the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Those are the two people behind it, organizations behind it. There's a advisory board that is overseeing or was overseeing the design of the survey, and but really still learning about who all is involved.
And what, give us a little bit of the backstory leading up to this week when this was postponed until next fall. Why has this survey kind of emerged as a story?
Well, because it was in the works and you know, a lot of people didn't know about it. The broader picture here is that individuals, in particular conservative individuals and lawmakers, have been critical of college campuses as kind of bastions of liberalism that stifle conservative speech and conservative speakers. So that's the backdrop. And then all of a sudden there was this resignation that was sudden, and it was Jim Henderson, an interim chancellor at UW-Whitewater. He was pretty vague in his description, but I started hearing from people on campus and elsewhere that the resignation was about this survey. So then I got a hold of some lawmakers. I found out that an individual named Tim Scheel is at the Menard Center at Stout, and he was one of the big, he's the principal investigator in this, what he says is just a simple academic study. Mm-hmm. But the overall concern from some people was that politicians, Republican politicians, were getting involved in kind of pushing this to happen. But turns out that this is a survey that had been in the works since at least January, maybe earlier. Former interim UW system president Tommy Thompson was supportive of it. He even mentioned something about a survey of this type going to students before he left office in January, before he resigned. So that's kind of what we started piecing together on Tuesday, the day after Jim Henderson resigned, and still learning about it.
And now this was supposed to go out yesterday to students, and it did not. What happened?
Yeah, well, for lack of better terms, Tim Scheel felt that there was an avalanche of questions, he said, and there wasn't enough time to answer all of those questions. The goal had always been for the survey to go out April 7th, but because there were so many questions, Mr. Scheel decided to delay it. And the reason he wanted to get it done in the spring was because of a funding issue. The funding comes from the Menard Center, which is funded by the family of billionaire John Menard. And he said now that it's been delayed, he still thinks that the funding can come together. So that was part of it. But I also heard from State Representative Dave Murphy, a Republican from Greenville, also chair of the Colleges and Universities Committee in the Assembly, said that they too had reached out and they wanted to make sure that this happened in the spring. Initially, it sounded like there was discussion within UW system of whether they were going to participate or not. A couple weeks ago, I guess interim president Michael Falbo, who is now UW system interim president, pulled the plug on it. But then Tim Scheel sent a letter saying, hey, we should do this. This is legitimate research. You know, there's a lot of misinformation, so we need to do this. We need to, with this data, we can kind of put these allegations of conservatives being stifled on campuses to rest. So with that, interim president Falbo said, okay, we're back on. And then there was some disagreements, and that's what led to the resignation of Mr. Henderson from Whitewater.
We'll be talking to Tim Scheel on Central Time on Monday. So, Rich, for now, there's a holding pattern until the fall?
That's what it looks like. Yeah, there's not a specific date, but the fall semester, which will probably be here sooner than we would like, with regard to the winter weather. But but there's still a question, like there's no specific date, you know, funding could be an issue, supposedly, I'm not sure. And I've even heard from some, from a lawmaker saying, well, they say they're going to do in the fall, but they're not so sure because there's been so much back and forth. It's really up in the air, but that's the plan, that it will go to all students at the four-year universities.
Rich, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rich Kramer, higher education reporter at WPR. We talked to him today about a UW system survey for students about freedom of speech and expression. Delayed once again, scheduled to come out this week now, scheduled for next fall on Monday at 3:30 on Central Time. We'll talk to Tim Scheel from UW-Stout about the survey and what is going into it. Now, the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration announced an increase in fuel economy standards in cars and other vehicles last week. Here's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg last week referencing the corporate average fuel economy standards that followed the 1973 oil embargo.
Before those CAFE standards started in the 1970s, the average vehicle got about 13 miles per gallon. With the standards we're announcing today, by 2026, the average vehicle will get 49 miles per gallon.
We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What kind of fuel economy do you get with your vehicle or vehicles right now? Are you in the market for a new car? Are you looking at that gas mileage number? How big a deal is it for you? Do you want to see regulations move those numbers up, those fuel economy numbers up? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Steph Tai is a professor at UW-Madison's School of Law with a focus on environmental law, administrative law, and contracts. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tim.
When you first heard about this new fuel economy standard, what is your first reaction to the numbers they're putting out and sort of the guidelines you're seeing?
Yeah, it seems like this has been in the making for a while. So when Biden issued his executive order regarding reconsideration of former rules, basically meaning the Trump administration rules, in incorporating science into their thing, into their discussions, this was in the works for a while because it sort of prompted the Department of Transportation to review whether or not the fuel economy standards were actually incorporating the state of the science in that. And that meant that the Trump administration's requirement of only a 1.5% annual increase in efficiency was, according to the Department of Transportation, not really in accordance with what would be acceptable according to the science of energy vehicle production, hybrid production, et cetera. And so they revisited that prior rule, and that's why they adopted this.
We just heard there, average of 49 miles per gallon. Average is a big word there, and the way the numbers are measured can be difficult to read. Is this statement, is this announcement as significant as it might sound at first glance?
It is, in the sense that it means that the automobile companies will have to incorporate a lot of like new technological developments in order to sort of reach that average kind of standard. So it does have some kind of effect, although it doesn't mean that every single instance of driving is going to reach that kind of standard.
Then there's the light truck question, which is, a really popular kind of car. It covers a lot of things like pickups and SUVs and others. Where do those end up falling, those very widely used vehicles in our market?
Yeah, I think that's still going to be addressed in a future kind of rule. But one of the things that was done in a previous regulation was that the Biden administration restored California's ability to create even more stringent standards than the federal standards. And so, and this is part of this whole background of the Clean Air Act, where it really couldn't get passed without like California's assent. And what that meant was that California has always had the ability under the Clean Air Act to apply to the EPA and the Department of Transportation for an exception, right? An exception to it where they could create more stringent standards, mostly due to LA. And for that reason, they might still be able to address things. And the Biden administration seems willing to assent to California's ability to address things, so that there are more stringent standards for light vehicles, light trucks.
It's Brianna Collar at 800-642-1234. George is with us in Ashland. George, hi.
Hi. Question. For my conventional pickup truck, fuel cost me about 30 cents a mile. And for my my EV, it cost me to operate about 5 cents per mile. So what I was wondering was whether the manufacturers under the new fuel standards get credit for their EV production.
George, thanks. Yeah, how do electric vehicles fit in, Steph?
Yeah, so they get credit in the sense that states have incentives now under this rule to create incentives for more production. And so it's up to the states in a way to create those incentives. There's also a lot of lobbying from various automobile manufacturers to create various incentives on the part of the federal government to help people meet the standard. And so we're going to see what happens in that mix. It's not entirely clear, but some of the stuff that might happen might be more sort of case by case or state by state kind of incentives.
George, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to UW-Madison Law Professor Steph Tighe, looking at new federal fuel economy and emissions standards. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these new standards? Do they go far enough? Do you want to see more stringent regulations on fuel economy in vehicles sold in the U.S.? And do you want to see more incentives for things like those electric vehicles that our caller just brought up? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And as gas prices have gone up lately, does that have you thinking more about fuel economy? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with UW-Madison Law Professor Steph Tighe, looking at new federal fuel economy standards as part of a larger Biden administration push to improve emissions and decrease the harmful effects of transportation on climate change. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your thoughts on vehicle mileage. Do you think it's more important to make our vehicles more fuel efficient because of concerns about global warming, about reliance on petroleum products from around the world? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Drew is with us in Green Bay. Drew, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I was just hoping to get your thoughts and some information on the state's additional taxes to electric vehicle owners. I think I understand that the purpose is that they're not paying fuel taxes at the pump. And I can take my answer off air.
Drew, thanks for that call. We get calls about this, I think, especially from EV owners. Steph, states, not just Wisconsin, charging additional fees because they're not collecting gas taxes from electric vehicles. Is that kind of at cross purposes with the efforts to encourage electric vehicles?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Drew. And it really does point to the, I guess, mixed messages that states are sending, right? On one hand, sometimes they're trying to encourage fuel efficiency, but they're still adding in this stuff to increase basically state revenue. And so it is something where states are not actually always being on point about this. And I'm glad you point to this phenomenon. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate. And to the extent that you can participate as someone who cares about this issue, you can write to your sort of legislatures to talk about these kinds of different taxes. That said, one thing that states can do is they can also give rebates for purchases of electric vehicles. And some of the states that, even though they create additional fines for electric vehicles, can also create rebates for the purchases of them. And so there's all this sort of mixed messages that states send.
Drew, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Steph, part of the reason for these mileage changes, not the only reason, but part of it is climate change. How big a part of the picture is, you know, our transportation fleet, our cars and trucks in the United States when it comes to climate change related emissions?
So it varies from state to state. For some states, it's a really significant part of their climate change, carbon emissions. And for other states, it's not as much. And it really depends on sort of really how much vehicle driving there is within that state. So it varies a lot, but it's still a significant chunk in terms of different sectors if you average it around all states. So it's fairly significant, and it's something that it makes sense for the Biden administration to address. And it also makes sense to address things like supply chain kind of issues, right? Because we're seeing this right now with respect to sort of Russian sanctions. And so in terms of long-term supply chain planning, we only have so much in terms of strategic oil reserves. And so limiting our dependence on fossil fuels can help with future sort of energy needs.
Now, these kind of changes could have a slow result because they apply to new cars on the market. Yes. And most of the cars we're driving aren't brand new. So these things take a while to phase in. Can you talk about how that affects the impact of a change like this?
Yeah. So what it's seen as is it's like seen as a sort of technological ramping, right? The idea is that once a company is forced or pressured to put in place additional technologies, they're going to use them from now on, right? Because they've already adopted those technologies, they're engineered that technology. That's something that they continue to use. And so the idea is that even though it's a slow change in terms of creation of new cars, it's a faster change in terms of technology development.
We're talking to Steph Tighe, law professor at UW-Madison, who specializes in environmental law, looking at this new fuel economy standard from the Biden administration, raising the average fuel economy in the American new car fleet. The goal, the average would be 49 miles per gallon. Still time for your call with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Big picture, Steph, you mentioned earlier, this is a reversal of a Trump administration standard, which itself was a reversal, I believe, an Obama administration standard. And so back, how much does that sort of ping pong back and forth affect the impact of changes like this?
So here's the thing about this is like administrations change. And I think manufacturers know that administrations change. So they plan for some degree of uncertainty. And so to the extent that they know that things are going to change, but that certain types of administrations are going to require much higher kind of standards, they're going to be having in their background, like, you know, in the back of their minds, like adoption of new technologies. And so there's a sort of underlying pressure that's still there, despite this fluctuation between administration and administration. You see that already in some fossil fuel plants where folks have already been phasing them out, not even though like the Trump administration adopted much more lenient rules for them, simply because they were concerned that a change in administration that they weren't sure about would happen and that they'd have to rapidly adopt, whereas it'd be more financially prudent to sort of plan things out beforehand.
How much do other markets around the world, I think especially the European Union, drive this? If I'm an automaker, I want to sell cars in France and Germany. Am I developing that technology anyway, regardless of what Americans are thinking about?
Yes, they absolutely do. And so sort of the global kind of regulatory system matters. Whatever the EU does matters. So they're responding to all of that. And so it's like a complicated calculus on their point in terms of what to anticipate and why.
Time for another caller. Steve is with us in New Glarus. Steve, hello.
Yeah, hi. Yes, I'm just reminded that back when this started before years ago, when they brought out electric cars because the gas prices were getting so high. And the problem with that was I made a mistake of buying one, but you couldn't go to a gas station. That's where they were supposed to charge them. They would charge the batteries on the electric cars, and they said they weren't allowed to because they all had contracts with the gas companies, the fuel companies, and they weren't allowed they were not allowed to charge any electric cars. So I'm just wondering if there's some way it wasn't a bad idea. Certainly, it was better than putting all the gas fumes in the air.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. And he brings up a really important point, Steph. And I know part of the latest infrastructure bill, one of the big goals is to boost charging. How much of that other stuff needs to happen to make these mileage standards meetable?
I absolutely agree. And I think that building charging stations that are strategically structured so that people can charge for long range kind of drives is extremely important. And I think that to the extent that the Biden administration can do anything to really boost the use of electric vehicles, it's doing very strategic plans to actually have those charging stations in place. One of the things that the Biden administration has said, and I don't know whether they're following up on this, but they've said that they're working with a number of various chains to sort of install charging stations. I anticipate this means convenience store chains, which are one of the more easily used for charging stations, because people can go in, shop around for their food, and then also get their cars charged. And so to the extent that they can really amplify that, I think that would be a really great way to address some of the charging issues.
Thanks a lot for that call, Steve. And just our last half a minute or so, Steph, what are you watching for next on fuel economy in America?
I think this is a really great change. I don't know whether it's going to get challenged by automobile manufacturers. There have been already things in the press with automobile manufacturers claiming that it's going to take way too much money to actually manufacture vehicles that actually meet up with these requirements, and that therefore the cost savings aren't so great on the part of consumers, because the cost savings will be exactly replaced by the cost of manufacturing those new vehicles. That said, traditionally, people have done meta studies on claims of costs of meeting regulatory requirements. And in general, it seems like those anticipated costs are way lower than the actual cost. So I anticipate that's going to be sort of in the background of all of this.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Steph Tighe, professor at the UW-Madison School of Law, joining us for a look at fuel economy standards.